I've got that right. Yeah, lots of nods at the back. Martin, you've so graciously fetched this for me, but I think I'm not going to bother. because I'm not going to preach, I kind of, my church, we don't particularly have lady preachers and don't do a lot of teaching and stuff. But what I want to do is try and encourage you in terms of God's power to break in and change your life, basically. Yesterday we were talking about the prophetic, we were talking about how God can come and speak to his people and how he does that through the ordinariness of our lives, how he makes himself known as an extraordinary, powerful God through ordinary people like you and me. And what I wanted to do is actually share something of my story with you. I can't share it all because it's a long story. And there's various bits and pieces that I use as a testimony. But I wanted to share with you this, the story of how God really came and broke in, not just to my life really, but mine and Stuart's and our daughters, the whole family, in terms of what he did for me. And it kind of starts with my growing years. My growing years were not good. My family background is very dysfunctional and very abusive. Or it was, should I say. And as a result of that, there's a lot of physical violence in the home as well as other things. And as a result of that, by the time I was getting into my teens, I was a very sickly child, always something wrong with me. And so Mum would take me off to the doctors and say, oh, she's not been speaking to us, or she's been wet in the bed, and you know, and I was 8 or 9 year old. But what she didn't say was, well, we beat her black and blue last night. And so that was the kind of scenario in a couple of sentences. So by the time I got into my teens, I was starting to suffer with a lot of pain in my legs. And the doctor then put it down to growing pains. I don't know if they still have that term, but back then everything was put down to growing pains, especially when you're growing rather fast and rather upwards at the rate that I was. So Stuart and I met on the day I became a Christian. That's a whole other story, which was when I was 18. And within 2 or 3 weeks, we'd got engaged to be married. We were going to have a long engagement, but Stuart turned up on our doorstep the day that my father had broke my nose and I was upset and so on. So he said, right, we're getting married. So we fast went into the point of getting married. So I was married at 19. And lots of things happened after that. But the problem with my legs got worse and I started having a problem with my neck. And they were still saying it's growing pains. Yeah. So anyway, into my early 20s, I started having major problems. Now, you are quite blessed in that we didn't come in the car, because if we'd have come in the car, I would have brought all my props. And my props is literally a bin bag full of things that I used to have to wear to hold me up. Because the first thing that happened as a 20-something year old is I had such difficulty with my neck and trapped nerves that were stopping me using my arm properly that I started having to wear various collars and until I had to wear a very structured one, you know, first a form one, then another one, and then a very structured one that held my head rigid. So I wore that for some time. Meanwhile, the pains in my legs are getting worse. And I went for some investigations, and that got nowhere for a while. And then I started having episodes where all of a sudden I would have no pain at all, but I would suddenly have no use of my legs and I'd fall down on the floor, not able to feel my legs. So this became quite concerning after we'd had a little one. And I fell against her cot one night and literally I had dropped her. But because I was still over the cot, she dropped and fell on the cot mattress, so that was okay. But that then was the last time I held my daughter. And she was about 3 months old at that point. Last time I lifted her up, should I say. Because after that, after a series of investigations, it was discovered that my back wasn't my legs at all. It was my back that was so badly damaged by the physical abuse that it was broken in three places. It was twisted out of line. The spine was twisted out of line in one point. And those little knobbly bits on the back that you can feel, they're called facet joints. A lot of the little facet joints were broken. And there were some bits of bone that was not where they should be, and they were pressing on the nerves that went down my legs, which is what was causing my problems. And such was the problem by this time that the nerve damage in my right leg meant that I couldn't feel my leg anymore. I couldn't move my foot or my toes independently. So I used to kind of put all my weight on my left side, and I began to develop scoliosis of the spine because I was leaning all the time, pulling this leg. And life got kind of the life of someone who was pretty housebound, really. I was more or less housebound. I would get out to the meeting on Sundays because someone would give me a lift. I couldn't sit on the pews. We had pews in those days, so I had to have quite an upright chair at the end of the pew. And I just kind of had this disabled lifestyle. It became that I could not shower myself, bath myself. Stuart used to sit me on the seat and hose me down. I think he went into jet washing the car mode. And he would just... a friend used to come twice a week to wash my hair, and various people helped with the housework. I couldn't do any of that anymore. So it was pretty boring time. And I had a lot of inner problems because the nerve damage had created problems with the bowel. So the bowel muscle didn't work as well as it should. And the bladder muscle worked too much, more than it should. And so there were all these subsidiary problems. And so my life consisted of having to get up in the morning, and before I got out of bed I had to get the collar on, and then I had a cast. They made me a cast which they cover you in plaster, and then they make a solid polyurethane thing out of it, which kind of was from there right down to there. And I had to learn how to get that on before I could get out of bed in the morning. And these things held me up for years. I used to have constant sores on my hips because the cast would rub. And it was just not good at all. Anyway, during that time, I did believe that God heals, and I believed that he heals today, because when I became a Christian, I had no church background, and I had a very naive way of looking at things. I became a Christian and looked in the Bible and believed what it said. So when they told me that the gifts of the Spirit are not for today, I looked in the Bible and I thought, but that's not what that says. And when they told me that baptism in the Spirit is not for today, I looked in the Bible and I thought, that's not what that says. And so when they said, healing's not for today, I looked in the Bible and I thought, I don't think that's what that says. Because I kind of came to this point of God is either everything we read about him or he's not. And what's the point of going to church? And what's the point of meeting like this if we don't believe he's like what he says he is in the Bible? And he says, I am the God who heals you. Now, I'm not saying I believe that we have a right to be healed. I'm not saying I believe that just as we have the forgiveness of sins in what God and what Jesus did on the cross, so equally we have healing. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that the cross opened up a way. The cross opened up a way for Jesus to bring that something of the not yet that we talked about yesterday. We live, don't we, with this not yet in sight of the day when there will be no more pain, no more sorrow, no more crying, no more tears. But it's not quite like that now. But we're in this in-between time. And because he's our Father, we can cry out to him and we can ask him to give us something of our inheritance, something of our not yet for today. And, you know, when our daughter first got her home, it was needed a lot of work, her first home, and she needed a new boiler and all these things. And if we'd have got the money for a new boiler for her and she asked us, would we have said, no, you've got to wait till we've died and then you can have your inheritance? We wouldn't have said that, would we? We would have said, yeah, we'll help you get a boiler because we love her. We're her parents. And so when God says we've got this wonderful inheritance to come, we can ask him to break into our now and to bring things into our life now, whatever that is. And so I was praying that God would heal me and asking God for that, but it seemingly wasn't happening. I carried on wearing the cast and I carried on trying to get to things, and I was asked by others if I wanted prayer, and others prayed for me. I had hands laid on me so many times that really I should be bold by now. And every name that was around back then, Ian Andrews and all these big names, I can't remember them all. If they came to Sheffield, they prayed for me and nothing happened. And the years went on and it was getting, looking like the, because everything was shifting all the time in the spine, it was unstable. It was looking like my right leg was in danger of having damage to it as well. So they decided they were going to operate. And the surgeon told me that the operation that I was going to have was called a buck spinal fusion. And this entailed taking bone from the middle of the hip, and it entailed him going into my spine, removing the damaged facet joints, the knobbly bits at the back in my terms, and removing the damaged bits of bone. And so he did. He took away the back part of the lower vertebrae, took away the damaged bits, and then he put pins in up through the vertebrae. And he got the bone out of the back of my hip and he wrapped it all around, these pins and all that bit. And the idea is, a bit like growing a rose up a trellis, the bone marrow from my hip grows all around that area and makes one solid bone. And then you've got a fused bone. So he was quite confident that this would stabilise the spine, prevent any more damage to my right leg, and he was hopeful that it would bring my pain levels down, because my pain was quite bad. So I went through this operation, which was very risky at the time. I'm talking about 31 years ago. And you might sit there and think, well, why is she telling us this story today? It's an old story, but it's not an old story. It's a new every morning story. And it's actually got a very recent update, so hence I'm telling you the story. But 31 years ago, it was a very risky procedure, and I nearly died three times, twice in the operating theatre and once afterwards. But I got through it. I got through the whole thing. And then for the few months afterwards, you're kind of in a waiting process while the bone grows into one solid bone, which then looks on an x-ray like a stick of bamboo. And then you can't bend down. I couldn't bend down anyway because of the pain and the difficulty I was in. But you can't bend down physically because you've had it all fused into one. So I had to bend with using my knees, which, just to say, you should all do that anyway, bend using your knees. That's the way we're supposed to look after our backs. But anyway, it went well. They decided it had been a good fusion, and in the course of time I was allowed to progress from my cast, which I didn't bring you, to this rather Victorian-looking piece of corsetry. And it has metal rods in it all the way around to help to support the spine, but it's got obviously a bit of give in it. So it's much easier to wear than the cast, solid cast. And then down each side of the spine, this is important technological stuff, you know. You've got these that fit down there, and they come out so that you can wash it. So down each side of the spine, you've got these that have a little bit of give, but they don't bend. Or maybe the guy on the strongest in the world would be able to do it, but... So they've got a bit of give to them, and that makes it for an easier thing to do, easier thing to wear. So I've now progressed, and after about 4 years of living in this cast, I've now got this on, so it felt a lot easier. But my pain levels had decreased, but the actual problems that I had were no different. I still had no feeling in my right leg, no ability to move that independently. I still had bladder and bowel problems and gynae problems and so on. So life kind of carried on pretty much the same way, but now I'm less at risk of losing the use of my my left leg. The guy said to me when he operated, he said, I was 31 years old, and he said to me, you have the spine of an old woman and you'll be in a wheelchair before you're 40. So that was a nice prophetic thing to say to me. Anyway, sometime after the operation, I went to the Stoneleigh Bible Week, and I was in a caravan, but the process of getting there caused me to just seize up, and I never got out the caravan for half the week. And it was really upsetting because I could hear them in the big tent. I could hear CJ Mahaney and Larry Tomczak calling people to the front to be prayed for, and I heard them saying that there was people with bad backs come out to the front, and I couldn't even get off the bed in the caravan to get to the tent. And I laid there crying and crying and crying. And I asked some people at the time that were leaders in our church at that time, they're not now, to come around and pray for me. And they did, and more or less gave me a little telling off for coming down to Stoneleigh anyway, because I wasn't well enough. And then said, well, probably you've not got enough faith to be healed. Now, if anyone ever says that to you, they are wrong. It's not down to our faith, you know. It's down to God. It's a free gift of his grace. But anyway, I was very upset by that, prayed about it all night, and then thought, I don't think that's right. I don't know why it's not happened, but I think I have got faith. And I saw the guy the next day who said that, and I said to him, I've prayed about what you said, and I think I have got faith to be healed. And he said, and I said, and when he does, I'll bend down and touch my toes. And so the guy said, that's ridiculous, that's unreasonable, because God doesn't do the unreasonable. And he had witnessed an operation similar to mine, and he knew that the spine, once it's solidified, doesn't bend. So he said, God doesn't do the unreasonable. Anyway, I thought, oh, well, that's what you think. So anyway, life went on. And then a year or two later, John Wimber, you may have heard of John Wimber, had an amazing ministry to church leaders and churches all over the world, and brought in the power of the gift of healing in many places, used himself a lot in healing. He came to Sheffield. And despite being in the state I was in, I would often get words of knowledge for people to be healed, which was quite funny because I would almost hobble to the front and say, there's someone here and God wants to heal them of hay fever. And then the person would run to the front and we would pray for the person with hay fever. They got healed and then I'd hobble back to my seat. But I wanted to learn more about this gift of healing. So I signed up for the conference, as did a lot of people in our church. And we were at the conference, and a couple of days into it, the conference was called Signs, Wonders and Church Growth. And a couple of days into it, people were beginning to mutter a little, we've not seen any signs and wonders yet. And there were general grumbling. And then on one particular evening, halfway through, I was really tired at making the effort to be at all these meetings, so I wasn't going to go. But the friend that I was going with, her and her husband, also disabled, they said, no, come, just keep going, come. And they talked me into going. And we would meet in the City Hall in Sheffield, which is like a concert venue. It has like cinema seats. And there was a section here roped off for the disabled. And we would sit there together with others like us. And as soon as I went in the building that night, I felt a lightness come over me and I felt my tiredness lift. And then as the meeting started, I began to experience very physical things. I began to feel that someone was going like this, up and down my spine at the back. And no one behind me was doing that to me or touching me, so that was quite weird. And then one of the things that was difficult was I couldn't stand for much more than about 3 or 4 minutes and I'd have to sit down. But then I would get uncomfortable on most seats while I was sat down, so I'd be very fidgety. But I began to become less fidgety in the seat. And then I started feeling as if something, some kind of hands inside was going like this and pushing around all my insides. And then I started feeling a heat at the base of my neck and a heat at the site of the operation that I'd had. And it got hotter and hotter and hotter. But it didn't feel unpleasant. It felt a bit like the heat treatment therapy that I'd had so many times. So anyway, this was all going on and I kept thinking, I wonder what's happening to my back. The penny just did not drop at all night. What's happening to my back? And then we had a time of praise and worship and I stood for about 10 or 15 minutes before sitting down and realised I'd been stood for 10 or 15 minutes. That's weird. And anyway, we got to coffee break and I didn't want, whatever this was happening, I didn't want it to stop. So I never went for a coffee. I stayed right where I was because I thought it might all stop if I go for a coffee. And then my friend Mavis and her husband came back. And Mavis had said to me right at the beginning, do you think we'll see any miracles this week? And I said to her that night when we went in the building, I said, Mavis, we're going to see a miracle tonight. And I convinced myself it would be my friend Mavis, who sometime earlier had had a stroke, and so her left arm was kind of like that. And I'd convinced myself that I was going to see her healed and she would go like that. I didn't tell her that, but I did tell her we were going to see a miracle. So she came back from coffee break and she said, do you really think we're going to see a miracle tonight? And I said, yes, Mavis. And I had a look, but her arm was still like that. And then John Wimber spoke, and I cannot tell you what he spoke on. I have no remembrance of it. All I remember was these sensations getting stronger and stronger and stronger the entire time that he was speaking. And then at the end of his talk, he said, right, now we're going to do the stuff. And doing this stuff meant that we were all going to pray for the sick. And so we stood up. And he said that he wanted people, no, sorry, he said he wanted people who were in pain or wanted healing from some particular thing to stand up. Well, of course, we were in the disabled section, so everybody wanted something in that section. And what he did, he had people to get in groups around the people who'd stood and pray. Well, everyone had stood. And I found myself not in a group, not praying for anyone, no one praying for me. So I thought, well, it doesn't matter, I can pray myself. And I closed my eyes and I went like that and I began to pray and I began to speak in tongues and I began to enjoy God. And I kind of lost track. If you like, I was in another world. And I had no idea anymore what was going on out there. I was so enjoying God, I was just lost in that. Meanwhile, and this is according to all my church friends that were there, meanwhile, John Wimber is saying, look for what the Spirit is doing and go and pray for that person. And he said, for instance, the Spirit's doing something with that woman there, which was me, kind of lost like this on my own. And so he said, you people, you turn and pray with her. So unbeknown to me, I've now got a ring of people around me that are praying for me. Anyway, eventually, I kind of came back to earth, as it were. And I opened my eyes and there's a man stood eye to eye with me. I don't know what was wrong with him. His face was pulled down to one side and his speech was slurred. But he said to me, he looked me straight in the eye and he said, God has healed your back. And first of all, I thought, how do you know I've got a bad back? And then secondly, I thought, actually, think about it. You've known all night that something's happening. And then I realised I got no pain, that I'd been stood up for longer than half an hour. And I looked at him again, and then in my ears, as it were, in my head, I heard the man say, you've not got faith to be healed. And I heard me saying, when he does, I'll bend down and touch my toes. And the whole unreasonable thing. And I thought, well, there's only one thing for it. And I got out of my seating area like this, and I went like that. And I touched my toes, a bit better than I can do now, I'm a bit older. And then I couldn't stop doing that. I was doing that and doing that and doing that, and I was saying to my friend, look at this, I can't do this. Look at this, I can't do this. Look at this, I can't do this. And I couldn't stop saying that and doing that. So much so, and I didn't realise it, maybe it was shock or something, but I was actually shouting it at the top of my voice. So I made so much commotion, everything ground to a halt, and then somehow, I don't remember how, I ended up on the platform. And John Wimber is saying, tell us why you can't do that. Tell us why you can't do that. So eventually I stopped to try and think, okay, so he doesn't know why I can't do that. So I started to tell him, about what was wrong, and then I got to the bit that I got to in my story earlier with you about how I had to wear a cast, and then my brain started thinking, and you don't wear a cast now, you wear this, and how can you bend down with that on, with these? So I've stopped talking to him and he's silently there waiting for me to carry on, and I'm silently here trying to decide what's going on, because really I think I was in a bit of a shocked state and I couldn't get my head around the fact that, yeah, I was bending down and touching my toes and my back shouldn't do that. But then I'm processing the fact that I've got the jacket thing on with these steel rods in it, and that shouldn't do that either. And so I thought to myself, maybe I forgot to put my jacket on today. And then part of me thought, oh, you can't have, you'd put it on every morning. No, maybe you forgot today. No, I put it on every morning. And in the end, in order to convince myself that I'd got my jacket on, and I'm not going to do this here today, because I'm much more self-conscious today than I was that night. That night, in front of 4,000 people, I heaved all my clothes up because I had to convince myself that I had indeed got that on with these steel rods down each side of my spine, and I had. So I not only bent down with a few spine, but I bent down with these attached to me as well, repeatedly. At that point, I couldn't finish my story, so I came off the platform. I couldn't process it. They couldn't get any more out of me. I wasn't communicating well. As I came down from the platform, there was a lady in a wheelchair here. She'd got multiple sclerosis, and the previous night we'd been praying for her, and I'd prayed for her the previous night. Nothing had happened. I came down off the platform and looked at her, and I thought, if God can do this for me, he can touch her. And she saw me looking, and she said, you want to pray for me again, don't you? So I said, yes. So I started praying with her, and a team member came and joined me, and we prayed for that lady. And by the end of that night, she was running around the building and pushed her wheelchair herself out the car or somewhere afterwards. So I went from that night, I went home, and I told everybody. The following morning, I got up myself. I used the toilet normally. There was no problem with my bowel. There was no problem with my bladder. There was no gynae problem. I showered myself. I got dressed myself. The biggest joy of all was to get my little girl out of her bed and get her dressed myself and lift her up for the first time in 4 years. And then I got the vacuum cleaner out and I did a spring clean. And then I walked along to my GP because he had to know that I can't do this. And along the way, I would see people who I knew, and I would say, look at this, I can't do this. And I bent down, and I got into my GP surgery, and I said, look at this, I can't do this, bent down. And I think he was a Hindu, so he had his own beliefs, his own religious beliefs. And he just said to me, God has done a miracle for you. And I said, I know. I contacted my consultants. It was followed up in a book, all manner of things. And he said, the consultant said, the biggest thing for him was the fact that he had no explanation as to how I recovered the use of my right leg. Because indeed, as you've probably noticed, I have the full use of my right leg. I can turn my ankle and twiddle my toes and everything. Everything righted itself in that moment that night. And I had further x-rays and scans to show that the fusion was still wonderfully there, the pins were all wonderfully there. So nothing had changed on x-rays or scans. Anyway, a few years later, I slipped down and fell on some ice. And I had more scans, just to check it all out. And they said as well, no, everything's okay. The pain will wear off. It's just external bruising, which it did. Everything's fine. And so I've lived every day. It's a new everyday story because every day I bend down in the course of what I do. Every day I've got the full mobility that I was given that night. So every morning, new every morning are his mercies. But November 2015, I fell down the stairs at home and basically had a lot of pain at the very base of my spine, the coccyx, and ended up last year, at the beginning of the year, having to have a full set of scans and everything done again to check out that I'd not damaged anything. And the coccyx joint had been knocked out, so I had to have a minor procedure to push that back into place. But everything was in consternation about what was showing on the scans higher up, where I'd had the operation before. And it finished up about 9 months ago with me in the consultant's office saying, him saying to me, you told me you'd had a buck spinal fusion. I said, yes. You did not have a buck spinal fusion. Oh. And then he said, you told me. And he carried on. You told me, all these things. And I said, I did. He said, you told me you'd had bone graft taken from your hip. I did. Well, he said, these scans don't show that. And you put the scan up and they've got this marvellous thing these days where they can show you in like 3D type of a thing, turn it round. And he said the consultant radiologist reports say differently. He said the consultant radiologist report says that if it were not for two pins in this person's back, I would say that no surgery or no defect at all is wrong with this spine, and no surgery has ever been done on this spine. And he said, but there's two pins, and the two pins are not in the spine, they're either side of the spine. And by this time, I'm losing it, you know, I don't know what this is all about. So my today consultant was trying to say that either I was telling fibs or my 30 year ago consultant didn't do a proper job. But I know, because I saw the x-rays back then, that he did do a good job. And he happened to be the number two in the UK that did it. So it also happens that the consultant radiologist that had prepared this report last year is a Christian and is in our church. And in fact, at that point in time, was my home group leader. So he sidled up to me one Sunday morning and he said, are you all right then? I said, can you tell me what this is all about? And he said, there is no sign of any damage ever being done to the spine. There's no sign of any bone graft. There's no sign of any surgery. He said, the facet joints are all there. And I said, well, how can that be? He said, well, you tell me. He says, bone graft can sometimes do things that are not nice and neat, like it can grow a bit of a bump or something. But he said, they don't grow new joints entirely. That doesn't happen. And he says, and the pins are not going into your spine. It says, there's one there and there's one there, doing nothing. Oh. So since then, I've been back to my GP, and my GP has had to have the attics searched at his surgery because back in 30 years ago, nothing was digital, it was all on bits of paper. And he has found letters, I meant to bring some of them and I forgot. He has found letters that state that I had a buck spinal fusion at the lumbar 3-4 area, that I had pins inserted, that I had the facet joints removed. He's found the letters that detail what I had done. He's found the letters that detail after I fell down on the ice 5 years later, that the pins are still in a good place, the fusion is still looking good, and so on. So all I know is that it's all okay now. And my friend in the church, not knowing what the guy had said 30 years ago, said to me, when I looked at that scan, he said, I was looking at the scan of a young woman's back. And he said, it's in better nick than mine, you know. So God is powerful and able to heal, and he's been doing that unawares to me. And why am I finding that out now? Well, because I believe he wants me to reiterate to people that God can do the impossible. Back then I was telling people, and I'm starting to tell people again now, he can do the impossible. We sang that this morning, that God does the impossible. He can move the mountains. He can break into our situations. And so I want us, as we close, I don't know whether Aid wants to come back up now, but I want us together to ask God to break into our lives with something of the not yet to come this morning here in this room. Yeah? He can do things in this ordinary room with us that have ordinary lives. He can break in and do things that speak of an extraordinary, powerful God. And so I certainly would like to pray for people, especially if you've got a bad back. There's one other thing I'd like to pray for people for, and I'm not going to tell you the full story now, there's no time, but our daughter that I referred to as a miracle, we couldn't have children as well. And so if you're in that position, I'd especially like to pray for you. But I'm sure there are others here that would like to pray for people who are ill. and I don't want it to be confined to those things. Anything that you feel you want to be prayed for, that you would like God to break in and touch with something of the not yet to come, please make yourself known. Let's pray. Let's do it together. Let's ask God to break in together as that community of God, expecting him to move together. Ed, would you like to?
Yeah, thank you, Julie. It's so encouraging to hear your story again. It does build faith. And let's see.